Welcome back to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition, where we bring you the latest trends in the oncology pharmacy space. I'm your host, Alex Gerlach, and today we're diving into an area of oncology that's generating a lot of excitement, measurable residual disease, or MRD, and circulating tumor DNA, also known as ctDNA. So for anyone in our audience who isn't familiar, MRD refers to the tiny amounts of cancer that remain in the body after treatment, and these levels are often too small to detect with traditional imaging. So this concept has been used in hematology for years, where MRD status was helping to predict relapse and guide treatment intensity. But now we have advances in liquid biopsy technology that are bringing those tools to the world of solid tumors. So ctDNA could offer a non-invasive way to detect microscopic disease that might not show up on those other scans. That really opens the door for earlier detection, for better treatment decisions, and more personalized care. But before I get too deep into the science, I want to give our listeners a sense of who's joining us today. So I have here with me Amber Cipriani, an oncology pharmacist, to help us unpack this topic. Hi, Amber. Thanks for joining me today. Why don't we start easy? Could you share a bit about yourself and your work as an oncology pharmacist?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about this today. My name is Amber Cipriani. I currently serve as the precision medicine coordinator at the University of North Carolina Medical Center and with the UNC Health System. I'm also a clinical associate professor with the UNC Eshelman School of Pharmacy. And so I started in clinical practice in the clinic. I saw a variety of solid tumors and then eventually got a little more focused in thoracic oncology before moving into this precision medicine role. And interestingly, before I became a pharmacist, I actually worked in industry for a little while. And part of my job there was developing some of the early genetic tests. And so I've been in this space for quite a while. It's really cool to see how the tests have changed over time.
That's awesome. So thank you for that bit of background. I want to set the stage for today's conversation. I've been hearing a lot about MRD and ctDNA being used more in oncology circles. But for those who are maybe not as familiar with MRD or ctDNA, could you walk us through these biomarkers and why they're becoming so relevant, and especially in the world of solid tumors?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, I think the idea of MRD has been around for quite a while in the hematology space, not so much in solid tumors. And even defining MRD is a little tricky. Some of the tests will call MRD minimal residual disease, which I think is what you hear in the heme space. But I also have seen molecular residual disease, which I think is actually a little bit more accurate for the types of tests that we're using. So I don't know, that I've seen the M stand for a variety of things.
Yeah, so I'm familiar with it being minimal residual disease. Writing on it specifically for multiple myeloma, that's how they phrase it, is minimal residual disease.
Well, I mean, what I'll say is when you look at the laboratory tests, I've even seen differences in how the laboratories are defining that molecular versus minimal. So, but I think either way, what it's referring to, at least in the solid tumor space, is the use of these ctDNA. CT stands for circulating tumor cells. Another abbreviation that you'll see is cell-free DNA, which is actually maybe a little bit more accurate because what these assays are looking at, and we've used these assays for quite a while in the metastatic space to do tumor mutation profiling, are the circulating nucleic acids that are in your blood. And so your normal cells release a relatively small, you know, amount of circulating nucleic acids. That's both DNA and RNA. And then the tumors, because oftentimes the cells are turning over so quickly, they're also releasing nucleic acid into the plasma. And so what the test is actually doing is you take a blood sample, you isolate the plasma, and they're looking at these cell-free or ctDNA fragments. That's what the test is doing. The fragments are usually shorter, and some of the tests are even looking at the fragmentation patterns, which look like they might be different from tumor DNA compared to the normal DNA. The barrier that we've been facing in solid tumors is that these assays historically were not super sensitive. You can imagine there can just be a few copies of some of these small fragments in the plasma. But the technology has progressed such that the ctDNA assays have gotten a lot more sensitive, and that's why we're seeing our ability to use them in solid tumors.
We see how these tests, we see how effective they are in like a preclinical development setting, right? But how are we seeing ctDNA testing being applied across different cancers in treatment, and how is that being used to guide treatment decisions?
Yeah, I think that's the tricky part right now is I think initially there's quite a bit of data. Not all of it is our large prospective studies, but if you look at meta-analyses saying that if you have early stage disease and your patient is maybe treated with surgery or some sort of definitive therapy, and then you check to see if they still have ctDNA, that is prognostic. So I think it's pretty clear that that ctDNA is going to predict if they're positive, they're going to have a higher risk of recurrence, and their survival outcomes are going to be worse. Where we're currently in like the data development phase is, as you mentioned, what to do clinically. And so there are a number of studies, and I think the data is heavier in the colorectal cancer space right now for this, but essentially looking at if you treat a patient with some sort of definitive approach, and then they're ctDNA positive. What does that do for their, next line of therapy? Usually looking at adjuvant treatment. And so there's a few studies that looked at this. One of the largest ones was an observational study called Galaxy, and there was kind of a subset called Circulate. This was out of Japan, and they looked at a number of patients with early stage colorectal cancer who underwent surgery and then tested them, did some ctDNA testing after the surgery. And they kind of proof of concept saw that patients who are ctDNA positive had a poorer prognosis. But then when they looked at who benefited from adjuvant chemotherapy, what they saw is that it was really the ctDNA positive patients who benefited from adjuvant chemotherapy. ctDNA negative patients did not. So if you, again, this was an observational study, patients were not randomized. But if you put that into practice, if you were to test your patient, maybe you could spare those ctDNA negative patients from chemotherapy.
Yeah, so it's obviously very early. It's in its infancy. So a lot of questions, a lot of gaps, and a lot of challenges that some of them probably haven't even presented themselves either at this point. So considering all of those factors, what kind of challenges and limitations do you see with MRD and ctDNA testing? And do you think that that's a matter of the science itself, the research, the standardization of the implementation in clinical practice, and even access for patients? Like, how available would this be? And how quickly could we see a shift from using more liquid biopsy assays over traditional methods of detecting cells?
Yeah, so there's quite a few challenges. One of the challenges is that, again, the laboratory methods, I think, are there. And so I'm seeing a lot of these laboratories say, hey, everyone should be ordering MRD testing. The caution I give to clinicians is that you should have a plan for what you're actually going to do with this MRD testing. And also, I think clinician knowledge, there's a few flavors of MRD tests and multiple assays. So the most sensitive ones are going to be these tumor-informed assays where you actually send the laboratory a sample of the tumor. They usually are doing whole genome sequencing and then picking some specific mutations to track, and they develop these bespoke assays so they're unique to the patient. You can imagine, at least from like a methodology standpoint, they're not the cheapest, right? But they are the most sensitive, and a lot of the clinical outcome studies use these tumor-informed assays. There are also what are called tumor-agnostic assays that all you need is a sample of blood. Those are going to be less sensitive and they're cancer-specific. So what I see as a risk to kind of putting this into practice is that, again, you can't just say, I'm going to order an MRD test. You have to know it's appropriate for the tumor type. I see a lot of confusion because we use this term ctDNA test. And so we're getting confused between the MRD assays and the ctDNA tests that are used in the advanced space. And so it's just the ordering of the tests, I think, is there's a possibility for a lot of errors there. And then there's not a lot of standardization across the tests. And so, and even if you look at the clinical data that we have, a lot of the assays that were used to generate clinical data for like the Galaxy study, Dynamic, InVigor, those assays have since been changed. And so it's really hard to apply that because the assay today is different than what they used in the clinical trial. A couple other concerns I have are, again, I mentioned like if you're going to order it, you need to have a plan, both the provider and the patient, with what you're going to do with the results. I think the risk I see is that your patient comes back ctDNA positive, but you don't have enough data to actually make a move to change therapy until they've progressed radiographically. And so then your patient is sitting there with all this anxiety about, am I progressing? Am I not? And what we know from these studies is that there's a big range of when we see ctDNA positivity and then when we see radiographic progression. It differs based on the cancer type, and it also differs based on the site of progression. So in the colon studies, we saw that patients who had metastatic disease in the liver, we saw ctDNA turn positive a lot earlier than those that had metastatic disease in the lung. So your patient could, you could have a positive ctDNA result, but not a positive scan for months or even years sometimes.
And it makes me wonder too that if you're not getting the most accurate read of ctDNA, do you run the risk of not necessarily know the status of their progression, right? So like they could be maybe a little bit further along than what the test is measuring, but because the test is measuring less, the provider maybe is making that decision to hold back on certain treatments that, but maybe they do need that. Like so kind of makes me wonder what kinds of obstacles in that realm will also present themselves for oncologists in trying to make sure that you address progression of disease as early as possible.
Yeah, and I think two thoughts. My prediction is that it's going to look a little bit like prostate cancer, where the velocity of that increase in ctDNA, similar to other biomarkers, might matter. That's my prediction, but we don't have data. So if you're tracking ctDNA and it's going up quickly, but you have no progression on scans, I don't think we know what to do yet. And so, we'll see.
No, it's hard because it's an emerging tool, right? It's an emerging approach to tracking disease progression and making treatment decisions, which are already really difficult things to do, because treatment decisions are affected by so many confounding factors. We have patient preference, patient access. We also have insurance. And would this test, which is a more comfortable option for patients, right? A quicker option. It's less invasive, but because of their insurance, they're unable to get access to it. So, and I think that might also lead to delays in understanding, how to best use these tools in clinical practice, like in a real world setting. So, I mean, this is going a little dismal on this one, but it's obviously very important to make sure that we talk about these challenges and obstacles, talk about them now before everything's already out there and we have no idea actually what we're doing, right? Putting the cart before the horse. So, in light of all of that and the momentum building in this area, how do you see MRD and ctDNA shaping the future of cancer care? Do you see this as being something that would become part of routine practice, similar in the way that it's kind of going that way in hematology?
I mean, I predict that it will become part of routine clinical practice. I think the first shift that you're going to see is, and you're already seeing it, are that ctDNA is being incorporated into more and more clinical trials. I mean, the FDA came out with a statement on this around how trying to advise how to use ctDNA as like a surrogate endpoint in some of these clinical trials. And at ASCO this year, we saw a number of studies that integrated ctDNA to figure out if they should escalate or not. And then in the advanced setting, we had some data trying to do the same approach in advanced breast cancer. So I think it's going to be part of routine care. I just, to your point, I would caution again, I think there are certain situations where early adoption of this might be super helpful, but I would just make sure that you have a plan. And then I think you mentioned payer coverage. None of the guidelines are recommending these tests, to my knowledge. And I scanned a few before this session. They always change on me, but to my knowledge, they're not guideline recommended. A lot of the labs are doing a good job controlling costs for patients, but it's probably not sustainable. So considering that, and then I think doing this testing, especially frequently, is going to increase the overall cost of care. So what are we going to do to pull back on that? So we need to figure out, can we scan less? What is the optimal, timing? Do we have to test every 3 months, or could we test every 6 months, or do we only need to test once? And so cost effectiveness, I think, is going to be a big a big question that we need to solve and something that we should be thinking about.
So before we fully wrap up, I'd love to see if you have a few takeaways for our pharmacy listeners, because this is such a new thing when it comes to approaching patients and talking about these new tools that are coming out. How do you approach that kind of situation? How do you educate them on what MRD and ctDNA are? And how do you work with the other people in that care team, the other medical professionals, in gathering that information and then using that information to make treatment decisions?
Yeah, I think pharmacists can be really helpful in this setting as far as working with the teams. I think pharmacists can be helpful in making sure that the appropriate ctDNA test is being ordered. And so I see a lot of well-intentioned orders being placed, but then it's the wrong test. And so you're not getting the information that you're actually looking for. And so that's the biggest thing is if you're working in a clinic where they're using these assays, just make sure you're educated on the different assays that are being used and when you should select which assay. It's very confusing.
Yeah. And it
And
seems
then,
like it's something where, like, we always talk about how pharmacists can really come in and pick up a lot of responsibilities and tasks to help alleviate things for other departments so that you can all kind of work better together. So, it makes me wonder too how important it is for pharmacists, obviously after educating themselves and being familiar with the assays and specific assays for specific cases, but when it comes to education of your peers too. That seems like it's going to play a really crucial role, to ensure that these doctors are prescribing the right assays.
And then talking, pharmacists are great at educating patients too. And so I think sometimes this feels a little bit maybe not drug related, but these tests are being used to inform in some situations whether or not a patient's going to receive chemotherapy. And so I think pharmacists can play a role in talking to patients about why the test is being ordered. And again, clinicians in general, I think it's really important that the patient knows why we're getting the test. I will say we're getting a lot of requests from patients to order this testing. And so I think there's a lot of pressure on providers, especially
To
patients who are
deliver.
really, like anxious about, I just want the information. And so for those patients, I think it's really important that you have the conversation. It could cost you money to have this information, and also kind of upfront saying what you plan to do with the information because you want to minimize anxiety around that.
Of course, of course. And it's very anxiety inducing to go into a medical center and have to do a more invasive biopsy to determine disease progression. So as far as being able to pop into your medical center, who knows, maybe you can even eventually pop into a LabCorp, right? That is so much more attractive and it's less anxiety inducing, less stressful for the patient. They're naturally going to want to go towards that. But we have a lot of barriers in place that we still have to try to overcome. So, lots of really great, exciting things happening here. Some things we need to think about, but seems like we're really on the way to that patient-centered care, that value-based care, instead of focusing on the treatment on the medication. Like the patient is the focus; they're coming from the center. So, it seems like this is just another kind of step in those efforts.
We do not have overall survival data on a lot of integrating a lot of these MRD tests, but I'm hopeful that I think the biggest benefit is that we're going to see improved overall survival. And also, especially in the early stage setting, some patients I hope are going to be spared from some of the treatments because we're better able to identify who needs what. And that's pretty exciting. But I do think it's important to be patient for the outcomes data. I always think back to our experience with PSA, and there's lots of examples of tracking biomarkers and kind of putting the cart before the horse. So I think we need to make sure that these are, yes, it's a blood test, it's easy, but we got to make sure that it's actually in the long term going to appropriately identify risk factors in most patients, and it's actually going to impact survival in the long run.